one of the things that's gone wrong with World Heritage and the World Heritage system we have, and this is easy to say in hindsight, but it wasn't easy to say when we invented it, is that when we decided to play with monitoring, you know, we began to get very concerned in the middle 80s. Mrs. Rydell wrote a letter, which I have a copy of, perhaps in 1983 or 1984, in which she said, "We've got this many sites on the list, but what have we done? And how do we know that things are going well with those sites?" So she raised, I think appropriately, a very important question. You know, we exist to ensure their long-term conservation, but do we have any means to know what's going on? ICOMOS was encouraged in the middle 80s to develop monitoring systems. François Leblanc and Jacques Dalibard actually developed a system which was submitted to the committee in about 1986. It was rejected because people weren't sure why they needed monitoring. Mrs. Rydell may have understood the need for that, but many countries interpreted that as ICOMOS policing what was sovereign decision-making. Nevertheless, the concern for monitoring remained in place, appropriate monitoring. By 1993, there was a very good expert meeting in Cambridge, Cultural Heritage and Natural Heritage Together, which came up with some recommendations for monitoring systems. The recommendations were well linked to understanding the values of the site, the OUV of the site, and to ensuring that all decisions were built around respect for that central theme or central idea of OUV. Those recommendations did not fly right away, though, because, as I remember, one of the state's parties, and this was India, I think raised once again this specter that, well, how can we involve ourselves with this? And we are sovereign countries, and we don't need ICOMOS or anybody to come into our country and tell us how to do our job. And they said it with sincerity, and they said it with enough force that it stalled the monitoring initiative for a while. It was picked up toward the end of the 90s. It was picked up, and you know, I see these things happening because of individuals, but it was picked up by Herman Van Hoof, who was then working for the World Heritage Center. Herman had spent a lot of time working for the UNESCO office and in Peru with Silvio Mutal, who loved monitoring and had been promoting monitoring systems of all kinds independently, even though he wasn't really part of the committee. Didn't stop him from promoting the need for monitoring. He was doing, in the early 90s, monitoring for Latin America, even though I think the committee never asked for it. Herman was trained, you know, by Silvio. And so he was a person who took a great deal of interest in monitoring, and we had the chance in the late 90s. He put in place the bits and pieces of the reactive monitoring system that are still in the operational guidelines and the periodic reporting system. Two levels, one site-specific, one looking at the big picture. And all of the attention these days, as far as I'm concerned, of the World Heritage Center is about the process of trading paper. And we've lost sight of why we're trading the paper. The trading the paper is meant to serve conservation goals. And I think if we had stood back a little bit in 1998, because I think that's the moment this reactive monitoring system was invented, if we stood back a little bit at the time and said, is this actually going to give us the results we want? We don't just want reports. We want actually changes in conservation activity. How that would have worked inside the committee, I'm not entirely sure. But it, you know, would have meant thinking about putting together some states' parties that might have an interest with a particular site and looking for resources, doing five-year projects, involving the advisory bodies, and, you know, having goals over 5 years that you could report back to at the end of that time on conservation issues.
But that gets you closer then to the periodic reporting.
I think it's very positive. I mean, it depends on how the state party treats it, and it's very difficult if a state party decides not to treat it seriously to sort of go beyond that. But most of them take it seriously because they see it as an opportunity. And the patterns that emerge from region by region from that state party analysis can often tell you very, very interesting things about where money should go, what the priority should be in terms of training, in terms of site management, and so on. But there have been many examples, informal examples of the kind of cooperation I'm talking about. It doesn't necessarily happen with the committee's full knowledge,